You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. This week, The Guardian published the first in a series of reports on why COVID-19 cases have surged in the Central Valley. I spoke with Vivian Ho, who reported the series, about her investigation into how the virus spread among agricultural workers. Also joining the conversation is UC Merced Associate Professor of Sociology, Edward Flores, who recently co-published a study on the connection between low-wage employment and the spread of the coronavirus. Vivian, what drew your attention to the Central Valley?
Well, the Central Valley has been just becoming a hot spot in terms of coronavirus infections. A lot of the counties have been on the state's watch list for weeks on end at this point, and they just have not been showing any signs of getting off. The rates at which the infections are happening are almost double of what's happening in the Bay Area, and it's incredibly concerning.
So I'd like to talk specifically about this first story in your series, which starts with the accounts of some agricultural workers in Wasco. What did you hear from the people you interviewed?
What I heard from the workers, and it was from the workers in Wasco, it was from workers in other plants, it was from workers from a lot of different plants all over the Central Valley, and it was the same story, unfortunately. It was that they trusted their companies. They thought their companies would take care of them and would do the right thing for them when the time came, when the situation got worse. They believed that the company would tell them if somebody in the plant got infected. Oh, and a lot of these plants, just by its nature, they work very closely together. It's not built for social distancing. It's ripe for spread. And so for a lot of these workers, they were hoping that their companies would do the right thing and tell them when somebody was infected. Unfortunately, they had to find out, a lot of them, through the media, through rumors, through word of mouth, sometimes by getting sick themselves. And it wasn't until it was too late, until there were outbreaks and people were sick by the hundreds, until their families were sick, that they realized that there was a serious problem.
I mean, the headline of your article is everyone tested positive. I mean, what did you hear in terms of the actual spread of COVID-19?
That's where it gets very difficult, because especially with testing. So in the Central Valley Meat Company, the entire production line, according to one worker, tested positive. In other places, in Primex, 151 workers at the last count tested positive. Elsewhere, in the Safeway Distribution Center in Tracy, 51 workers are tested positive. And that's just what we know right now. What we know for sure, though, is that these workers, many of them were not informed until it was too late. They went home. They unknowingly infected their families. Their families then went on to their jobs. They unknowingly infected their co-workers. And now we're in the situation that we're in.
And I mean, there's one in particular heartbreaking story in which a worker exposed the coronavirus to her family. All four of her children tested positive. Is that right?
Yes, all four of her children, including her son, who has asthma. She was incredibly scared, incredibly worried about her son, but in the end, they all came out okay.
So as part of your reporting, you spoke with Edward Flores, Associate Professor of Sociology at UC Merced. And Edward, I'd like to bring you into the conversation. You have done research looking at the relationship between low-wage work and COVID-19. Tell us what you found.
So in our report, we examined American Community Survey data and data from the California Department of Public Health, and we examined the association between COVID-19 positivity rates above 8%, which place a county on the state's watch list, and low-wage work in large households. And what we found was that in those counties that were above the state average with regards to average household size and percentage of households that were low-wage, in those counties, 14 out of 15 were on the state's COVID-19 watch list with positivity rates above 8%. Whereas with the 37 counties that did not meet that criteria, only two of those counties at that time had positivity rates above 8%.
And just, can you put that into perspective for us? I mean, we live in a region where there's a great deal of poverty, and there are, you know, a number of people who are working in these, you know, really low wage jobs. Given what you found, what are the implications for the Valley as a whole as it pertains to the continuing spread of this virus?
Well, the implications to the Valley are that if we fail to cope with the spread of COVID appropriately, then the Valley is going to be much more acutely affected than the rest of the state. Separately from our hidden threat policy brief, separately, we had examined the percentage of essential workers in counties in California and across the nation. And we found that the Valley has some of the highest percentages of their workforce being essential workers in the nation. Madera County, for example, has more than 40% of its employees are essential workers. That ranks third in the nation. Madera, Kings, Tulare, Merced, and Kern are all in the top 10 for counties with the highest percentage of their workforce being frontline essential workers.
Wow, that's staggering. So I want to talk about what the implications are from a policy perspective, but first I'd like to come back to Vivian and hear a little bit more about your reporting on this topic. I assume you reached out, well, I know you reached, I read the article, you reached out to the farm operators, owners of these meatpacking plants. What did you hear from them?
Well, they said that they had been practicing CDC guidelines from the start, CDC county and state guidelines from the very beginning at every stage of the pandemic. And this was Primex. This was their spokesman. He was saying that this was happening. According to the workers whom I spoke to, quite a few of them, this was absolutely was not the case. The workers were telling me that they were told from the beginning that masks were not mandatory. If they wanted to wear a mask, they could bring one from home. At one point, Primex was selling a mask for $8 a piece. The social distancing guidelines weren't put in place until well after the outbreak had happened. And just in general, they weren't informing people when infection had arrived. They weren't telling people when they needed to get tested, when they needed to go home, when they needed to be aware of the situation, and when they needed to isolate. When they would ask about when people weren't showing up for work, when they would ask why this person wasn't showing up for work, they would say, oh, this person's on vacation. Oh, this person just, don't worry about it. But they never got a straight answer. And, you know, from the start, that's not what the CDC and not what the state and not what the county says to do.
So assuming that the accounts of the workers are accurate, I mean, how are businesses going to remain operational if you're having COVID wash through their employees in the way that we've seen? Or is it just that from the company's perspective, the workers are expendable?
Unfortunately, that is the attitude that I've perceived from my reporting, that this labor force is essentially expendable, that they're replaceable, essentially. What happened at Primex was, especially when the workers started speaking out, there were layoffs. And Primex said that this was typical of the season, even though it was right in the height of harvesting season and whatnot. They had layoffs, and then they rehired people for the same positions. The workers that I spoke to expressed a lot of upset over this. They said they felt like their lives didn't matter. They said they felt like they were nothing, essentially. But unfortunately, what we're seeing right now, I mean, what should have happened from the very beginning is we should have been taking this seriously from the very beginning. Companies should have taken this virus and taken their worker safety and taken precautions from the start. They should have put social distancing guidelines and precautions in back in March. They should have provided masks. They should have provided PPE. They should have provided sick pay. They should have been upfront and clear about that and told workers it's okay that if you're not feeling well, don't come in. That needs to be a clear policy, because if workers don't feel like it's okay to stay home if they're feeling sick, if they don't feel like their jobs are going to be safe if they stay home, then they're going to go to work when they're feeling sick and spread the virus. Unfortunately, we can't go back in time. But what we can do is just make sure that we do this now, especially at plants where the virus hasn't reached yet or that we don't know of it reaching yet. We got to start doing it now. We got to make sure these practices are in place.
Right. You know, I'd like to come back to you, Ed. What are the policy implications here? What can be done from, let's say, a state or local perspective to learn from the mistakes that were made in the past to ensure that they don't happen again? Because we know this virus is going to be with us for a while.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And the first mistake that we need to learn from is that we assumed that individualistic behavior, individual level behavior, such as wearing a mask and practicing social distancing and not visiting family members, was going to keep our nation safe and flatten the curve. And we need much more than that, the truth is, because as long as we want to eat every day, the food is going to get on our table somehow. And that's going to involve a certain amount of work in which people are in proximity with each other and can't simply Zoom as middle-class workers can. And so we need to be a lot more deliberate about focusing, learning more about where these outbreaks are happening and developing policies that mitigate the spread among those types of workers instead of what we have right now, which is policies largely in place that protect middle-class workers and assume that individual-level behavior will prevent the virus from spreading amongst everyone else.
So, Vivian, this is just the first in a series of reports that you have coming out focused on COVID-19 in the Central Valley. What else are you looking at? What can we expect in the future?
I have a piece coming out hopefully within the next couple of days, maybe the next week or so. That's going to be looking at how politics and policy making has led to the moments that we're in right now. And then after that, I'm going to be looking at the outbreak at Avenal State Prison and how the prison ecosystem in the Central Valley has led to the surge in coronavirus cases.
Fascinating. Well, we certainly look forward to reading those. Before we wrap up, though, Edward, I'd like to give you the last word. As a sociologist, you have been researching inequities in our system for a long time. And certainly what we're seeing in the Central Valley is that the conditions that many people are experiencing have exacerbated the spread of this disease. And so this is a question that I've asked other sociologists, other academics, and I want to ask you as well. Do you think, and it's slightly different from what I asked you before, but do you think in general this moment will help us as a society recognize the cost of these inequities and as a result make some lasting sort of systemic changes to create a more equitable society? I mean, do you think this could be a tipping point for the way we think about our shared responsibility to one another as a society?
I do think that this moment can be a tipping point. When we look at great upheavals or economic disasters that have happened in the past, they've been associated with major changes in our policies. And for example, the New Deal came about as a result of the Great Depression. And many of the benefits that we enjoy today, such as Social Security, came about as a result of the New Deal. Unfortunately, the New Deal left out a lot of workers, agricultural workers, domestic workers, jobs that were done by largely Black and Brown persons. So this pandemic, as devastating as it is a moment in which we may begin to see some changes addressing workers from communities that are furthest on the margins. And if we want to be optimistic, right now more than ever is the time when we may see changes in the system that people have been advocating for many decades now. I think our society faces a reckoning over the costs of low-wage work, not just to those workers themselves, but to the rest of us. And there are specifically some measures that are happening at the state level that I think indicate a renewed response towards addressing the conditions of those workers that are furthest on the margins. Specifically, there's the Safety Net for All Coalition, which is comprised of over 125 of the state's largest community immigrant rights and worker organizations. They have been advocating for wage replacement. And just recently, the state legislature's joint stimulus proposal highlighted wage replacement for undocumented workers as one of their priorities. If this passes, this would be historic. It would be the first time that that unemployment benefits were extended specifically to undocumented workers. And there's also state bills right now that are in the process of gaining support, which would expand paid sick and family leave provisions for all workers. And finally, the Office of Safety and Health Standards Board is about to make a decision on an emergency COVID-19 temporary standard, which for months was something that hadn't been discussed, but now under pressure from advocates may be passed. And so we see several changes happening in the short term addressing COVID, but at the same time, more broadly addressing the needs of the most disadvantaged workers in ways that our public wasn't coalescing around previous to the pandemic.
Could I add something here?
Absolutely.
We're talking about shared responsibility here. And I think what's really important to keep in mind with all this is that I feel like too often than not, even within this pandemic, we look at these situations and we look at these stories and we think to ourselves, well, it's not happening to me. It's not happening in my world. It's not happening in my apartment. It's not happening to my friends. So it doesn't affect us. Like, yes, these outbreaks are happening. Yes, this virus is happening, but it's happening to these low-wage workers. That's awful, but it's not happening to us. But what I think this pandemic has laid bare for all of us is that we are much more interconnected than we all thought we were. This is not happening in a silo. These workers that are catching this virus, they live in our cities. They live in our communities. They are going home to their families that live in the same houses as them. Their families are working in the restaurants that you frequent, that you are going to, that you are fighting for being able to dine in right now. It's all interconnected, and their conditions, their working conditions affect you just as much as it affects them.
Well, that's a great point to end on. Vivian Ho, West Coast reporter for The Guardian, and Edward Flores, Associate Professor of Sociology at UC Merced, thank you so much for your good work.
Thank you for having us on the show.
Thank you.